Business Baby with Melissa Ambry on Blog Talk Radio. Savvy solutions for your business.
Hello, everyone. We are on It's Business Baby, and today we are talking about business plans. As you know, as business baby, we always, you know, try to figure out what can we do to continually help business owners, small business, mid-sized business, it doesn't matter. All of us have a need to continue growth, to constantly improve, and just to keep, you know, our foundation. And business plan is one of those foundations that we need to sit on top of to maintain, stay steady, and just continually build on top of that. So today we have Peter Mehit on the line, and he's going to discuss business plans with us of, you know, pretty much any and everything you could think of, I'm sure. So, Peter, how are you today?
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me on It's Business Baby, because it is Business Baby,
yes.
And I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. So let's start out by just, you know, finding out, how did you get into business plan and just figure, you know what, this is my niche and I can do this?
Well, I'm going to tell you exactly how I got into business planning, because it really evolves around exactly how you should not start a business. I worked in corporate America, traveling all over the world, doing high-value outsourcing and business process improvement for very large corporations. And so I was on an airplane 15, 20 days a month and not seeing my family and not seeing home. And so one day I decided, well, actually my wife said, I want you to quit your job. And I did quit my job. And then for the next year, I tried to figure out, how am I going to make money? I thought I could help people who were thinking about outsourcing be better at outsourcing. I could help the client not be ripped off by outsourcing companies. But I found it was very hard to find out about where those deals were. And in the meantime, people came up and they said, hey, you know anything about writing business plans? And I said, absolutely, I do. And I started writing business plans, and that was in 2004. We've been doing it for about 12 years. We've written nearly 600 of them. They've raised about $150 million in capital for our clients. And I've just met literally thousands of amazing entrepreneurs who are inspiring and keep me going and make me really happy that I'm in it. But did I pick it? I think I'm like a lot of entrepreneurs in that I kind of generally had an idea what I was going to do, but I didn't really go out and think about it. And now that I do planning for a living, I understand how valuable that plan is, because the most important thing about having a plan is it saves you time, the one thing you can't get back.
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer in that. So what is one of the biggest, I won't say biggest, I'm just going to say, what are some of the common mistakes that you see a lot of business owners do when they're starting out with the business plan?
Well, I think it really kind of corresponds with what they're the most afraid of doing. So, like, if they don't feel they're good writers, then they kind of don't really do very well on the writing part of it. If they're challenged by numbers, then they don't do very well on the financial part of it. But the one biggest single mistake that I see people make universally is, how can I say this? It's not about me. As great as I am and as cool as I think I am, customers don't really care about me. They care about what I can do for them. And so the number one thing anybody in any business can do is figure out who their customer is. And if they don't take the time to figure out who their customer is, then they don't know how to speak to them. They don't know how to reach them. They don't know what their message should be. Because here's the thing. If you're selling to anybody or everybody, you're selling to nobody. And so, to me, the number one biggest mistake that people make when they start a business is they don't really sit down and think about, who am I selling to? What's the experience got to be so people feel comfortable and trust me enough to part with their treasure and buy from me?
Okay. So with that being said, those that are uncomfortable in those areas of writing, financing, and writing about me, what is the first step to correct that? Of, I'm here to provide this solution for this reason, and here's, you know, my information.
I think, again, going back to what I just said about identifying the customer, the way I work with my clients is I say, imagine yourself sitting across the table or sitting at a Starbucks, and you're talking to your ideal customer. And what would be some of the things that you could do to know whether or not they could use your service and know whether or not they would buy your service? Well, the best way to do that is to ask questions, right? What is it that you need? What are the things? Where's the pain points? Where are the things that are holding you up, Mr. Customer, from getting what you need out of life? Is it this product that I have? Is it this service that I have? But always thinking in terms of what is it that they want to have? See, a customer doesn't buy a drill. They really literally buy a hole in the wall. That's what they want. They want something that 'll make a hole in the wall. So if they're a professional and they're making lots and lots of holes in a wall, then they care about the drill, how many different sizes of drill bits it can take and how much power it has. But if somebody's making one hole in the wall, they don't really care that much about the drill. They just want the hole in the wall. So understanding what your customer needs and wants and being able to imagine yourself having a conversation with them where you are eliciting from them the things that they need will tell you exactly how to sell to them. Once you've figured out who the customer is and how they're going to buy, that's going to dictate, like, so for example, if you have a store, a brick-and-mortar store, it's going to dictate what that store looks like. I mean, let's take, for example, Starbucks. Starbucks is not an accident. Everything about Starbucks is planned. They don't buy food that interferes with the smell of the coffee. They just recently added music in, but they add music that has a certain kind of ambiance where conversation flows over the top of the music. The music is not demanding your attention. They set it up so you can spend time in the Starbucks. You can meet people there. They very deliberately decided to create an atmosphere to attract a very specific kind of customer. And that's what I think you have to do, whether you have a home-based business and you're doing hair out of your back bedroom, or you've got a clothing store, or you're an accountant, or you're an attorney. You still have to figure out who that ideal customer is and be able to put yourself in a position of having a conversation with them. And literally, if you can imagine that conversation, if you can visualize that customer, then the actual writing out of a marketing plan or a business plan is going to be very simple, because they're going to tell you what it is they need to be able to buy from you.
Right. So once they figure that out, who the customer is, what they need, how they can provide that solution to them, mm-hmm. you know, it comes to writing piece. And mm-hmm. there's, you know, a lot of people don't know what sections they should include, you know, how long it should be, not to get too wordy. And anyone that asks me, I'll refer them to online stores. That's kind of one of the things that I do. And Live Plan is, you know, a real inexpensive tool. It sections it out for you. It gives you examples. But you still have to be able to, you know, feed it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
For someone that's not familiar with, you know, Live Plan and, you know, Palo Alto, all these, you know, different ones out there, and they just say, okay, I'm open a Word document and go. What is the best resource that they can start to say, okay, let me start here?
The issue with people starting businesses doesn't really have to do with the tools that you use, because there's a million things you can do. You can get Biz Plan Builder. You can go to Live Plan and do their thing. There's about 15 Live Plan knockoffs now. You can go to the SBA, and the SBA has a business plan template, which I would not advise you to do because it's a really bad template. You can go to SBDC or SCORE, and you can get a coach to work you through the process. The real issue with people writing business plans is they look at the business plan as some kind of monument. Like, if I get the business plan done, then I'm going to know what I need to know. No, That's not what it is at all. The business plan is the end result of you learning what you have to learn to be able to start your business. So it's exactly like you said. If you don't know what to feed Biz Plan Builder or Live Plan, if you don't know what to feed it when it asks you all those questions, then you're going to be flummoxed. And so that's where somebody like me comes in, who has done hundreds of these things, and I can sit down with you and go through with you and analyze your business and analyze your situation and actually give you a roadmap to follow to be able to write it yourself, or I can write the business plan with you, but you're going to understand your business. The most important aspect of writing a business plan isn't to have a document at the end of it. It's to understand how you're going to run your business, and also to entice, if you're looking for investors or funding from a bank, convince them that you know what you're doing sufficient that they'll loan you the money. So the real issue with business plans have nothing to do with business plans. In fact, my thinking about business plans has changed radically since I started this business. If you wanted to have a spiral-bound notebook, and in your spiral-bound notebook, you had different sections that you had tabbed off by sticky notes that covered your operations, that covered how you bought your stuff, that covered how you do handle your accounting, that covered how you handled your customer, and so on. If you did that and you went through the rigor and the diligence to really learn everything you had to learn about that section, I don't care if you ever finish a formal business plan. As long as it's the rigor and the exercise of learning everything you know, need to know around the dimensions of operations, accounting, human resources, sourcing, and marketing. If you can get around all of those different disciplines and really understand what you're doing, then you become a walking business plan. Now, do you need a document from time to time? Yeah, if you're going to a bank, if you're going to an investor, if certain suppliers are going to want to see it, certain landlords are going to want to see it, if you're leasing a valuable piece of property. But I'm more concerned that you understand what's going on in the business. So I think you made a really great point about that. It's like, if you don't know what you don't know, the first place to start is to sit down with any business plan template and try to fill in the information. And wherever you get stuck, that's where you need help.
I love that you said that, you know, not only, yes, they can hire you to do the business plan, but it's not so much where, here, I'm paying you your fee, this is my business, go do it. You're actually involving them in making them do the work. And so many people don't want to do the work. They just want, hey, here it is, go get it done, give it back to me, and not reading it and don't even know what's in it. So I love that you said that, you know, they have to go do the work to help feed you so you can, you know, put everything together like it needs to be put together. So
I just want to add one thing to that, too, is that this was a deliberate outgrowth of, like, before the crash, we used to get fed by banks because pretty much in those days, if you fogged a mirror, you could get a loan, right? So we got dozens of business plans coming in every month before the crash. And we wrote business plans, and we realized after a while that the customers weren't reading them. And it really bothered us because we put a lot of effort into trying to understand the customer's business and make sure that they got what they needed out of it. Now, I won't let a customer go unless I'm positive that they understand it. And we actually fire clients that aren't willing to do the work. Because here's the thing, if I fire you out of an engagement, it should shock you sufficiently that you ask yourself the question, do I really want to be an entrepreneur? Because it's not for everybody. And if I allow you just to collect a fee to become an entrepreneur or think you can without you being grounded, then I've kind of messed my karma up a little bit. I don't really want to do that. And so, it's really important that they want to do the work. Not that they do the work, but that they want to know, that they have the intellectual curiosity. Because I'm telling you, there's nothing more rewarding than being an entrepreneur, and there's nothing that will kick your butt faster than being an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. And paying attention, being involved, doing the work, understanding how this screw screwed in and how this screw screwed out, is understanding every piece of that and just being involved. It's no way that can be done without a business owner being involved. And I love that you said that and not just, you know, hey, give it to me, I'll write it.
No, it doesn't work.
And No, it definitely does not work. There's a couple of things within the business plan that I wanted to hit on.
Sure.
I find it, you know, puzzling, but at the same time, like you say, if you don't know what you don't know, then, you know, you won't know till you ask or go ask help. And, you know, I mentioned SWOT, SWOT, SWOT. And I'm like, SWOT? What you mean, SWOT? What's SWOT? And I'm like,
no, don't
what?
Hit me. Don't hit me. No, don't hit me.
Yeah. What? What you mean, what's SWOT? So,
SWOT, don't SWOT me.
You know, and I'm like, your strengths, your weaknesses, opportunities, your threats. So I'm like, well, threat what? I'm like, oh, come on. You know? So I want you to hit on that a little bit for me on SWOTs and then each one of them, of the best way for them to include that into a business plan and that they should not be afraid to mention the weaknesses.
Well, I'm even going to take it a step further. If you're not willing to be unsparingly honest about your strengths, weaknesses, threats, and opportunities, if you're not willing to be and not just put straw man things up that you can rip up and easily mitigate, then don't do it. Because anybody reading it is going to look at it and just go, well, boy, you just wasted my time. If you've if you've got serious threats and serious weaknesses and blind spots, and every project does. I'm working on right now, it's about a $200 million development project in the Midwest, and I'm fighting with the client right now because the client's saying, well, you know, there's really, this is just all opportunity. Nothing is all opportunity. So if you're going to somebody, especially an investor, and you don't detail the places where you could get derailed that you haven't thought of it and they think of it, they're going to look at you across the table and they're going to say, well, ABC could happen and you're out of business, and I'm so concerned that you didn't see that we're done talking. I've seen that happen. So in particular, don't overstate the opportunities, don't understate the threats, and don't put threats in that don't mean anything, that you can say, well, you know, the global economy could not go up as high, so therefore we'll just sell more stuff or whatever. Don't put things that are easy to refute. And then your weaknesses are, in the beginning, are typically going to be around lack of capital and lack of seasoned personnel. Take those on directly, and how are you going to mitigate those? How are you going to rise and deal with them? And then, most importantly, do not overstate your strengths, because what a SWOT usually looks like is it's a big, giant capital S, a tiny subscript W, a huge O, and a lowercase T, and they all need to be the same size, right?
Yes, yes. And you're right, people, that they play up the good and then, you know, really tiptoe around the other. So,
human nature, right? That's human nature. But see, the thing about it is people invest in people who know what they're doing. People follow people who know where they're going. Okay, so if you have the courage to say, hey, you know, this doesn't really look really good here, but this is the thing I'm going to do to mitigate against that, and here are the things that I'm going to do. That builds trust, because you know what? Somebody that's written a check, a banker that's done a bunch of underwriting, they've seen dozens of cases. The stuff that should be in there, if it's not in there, it just counts against you. That's why in some cases I tell people not to do them. If they cannot do them and make them balanced, I just say leave them out.
Okay. The other piece I would like to hit on is the marketing plan that so many do not include, or is one paragraph. And I'm like,
yeah.
There's no way you could do all your marketing in one paragraph. Absolutely not.
Right. Social media, old media, guerrilla marketing, television, radio, internet, Facebook versus LinkedIn versus Instagram versus whatever you want to talk about. There's so many channels now. And the channels are driven by what? Well, the very first thing I said in this interview, the customer. Who's the customer? And where does the customer spend their time, and where do they get information from, what sources that they trust? And so the whole idea is you're trying to build trust. And the best way to build trust is to tell people the truth, and to tell them the truth in the place where they're used to hearing the truth. And so if somebody hasn't taken the time to have someone figured out where their customers are going for that kind of stuff, then they shouldn't even start. So a marketing plan really needs to be not just here's all the elements I'm going to use, but here's the timing of it, because the thing about marketing is it's repetition, it's rhythm and repetition. So many spots happening over so many weeks for so much time, so many posts going up at so much time. And I'm telling you, doing marketing on a professional basis is really, really difficult. And that's why you've got to figure out in advance what you're going to do, because you think, well, you know, I worked on my social media, you know, for 4 weeks in a row and I'm kind of burnt out on it. Guess what? You're always going to carry that. Whether, you know, in the old days when our parents had businesses, they were dealing with the yellow book and advertising, but they still had the same issues. You still got to figure out where they're looking, get in front of them, and get them a message that they can hear and go, I see myself in that message. I believe it's true. I'm gonna buy from you.
Awesome. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking about business plans and some of those questions, those sections, those areas of where we fall short, or we just don't know what to do. We will be back in just a few.
It's time for Tiny Tips with a Huge Impact.
Okay, I got a tiny tip with a huge impact. And the tiny tip with a huge impact is, before you start with your business, with your business plan, or with any effort about starting a business, the first thing I want you to do is every day sit in the chair for 15 minutes. The first day, I don't care if you look around, think about everything, worry about stuff, but every day try to spend a little more time tuning out the noise of the world, getting quiet, getting still, and when you can sit in that chair for 15 minutes calmly, then start thinking about what your business looks like once it's open. Start thinking about your business when people are coming through the door, when they're buying from you. What do they sound like? How does the place smell? What are the sounds that you hear? What is the conversation that your patrons are having? Are they happy? Are they concerned? What are the things that you imagine them to be doing? And then take that imagination and that visualization and break it down into, I need so many tables. I need so many things on the wall. It needs to be a certain color, a certain sound. My product has to be a certain way. Every minute you spend in that visualization makes your business plan easier to write and easier to sell. And so just do it. Trust me, it works. I have all my clients do it. My name is Peter Mihit with Custom Business Planning and Solutions. This is the tip for you. And I want to offer you one thing. If you call into this program, we will send you an e-copy of our book, Killer Business Plan, and it will take you through how to do it.
Thank you so much, Peter, for that tiny tip. That was wonderful.
No, thanks. And I do mean about the offer. I don't know how you'll set it up on your program, but thinking an e-copy of our book, which will take them through how to write a business plan, and it's a really good book.
Absolutely. What's the best way for them to do that? So once they call in, is there a link that they could click on? Where should I direct them?
I can either send you a link, or they can go to custombps.com, and I will put a link on the front page for your radio program.
All righty. And if
so
you could also
you
send me that link, and I'll attach it to this. Yes, please send me the link.
Okay, we'll do it that way. Sounds good.
Okay. So getting back to business plans, the next thing I want to hit on is forecasting. So many don't know, you know, should I do 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? what should I put in it? You know, I don't want my numbers to seem crazy. Oh, wow, I'm in the red. I can't be in the red. And when you're starting out, that kind of goes with it. It's okay for you to be in the red.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
But
in fact, you better
of course,
be.
Right. So, you know, and of course, all businesses are different, you know, depending on what you're doing. You know, services may not have as much expenses as a retail. So it really depends on your business. So it's okay to be in the red, but if you're in the red 6 years down the line and you making little bleeps here and there, then, okay, you need to look at something. So
mm-hmm.
let's talk about forecasting, how far out they should go starting out, and some
mm-hmm.
of the things that they should think about as they're planning their years.
Great question. I'm happy to answer it. Here we go. If you're going to a bank for funding, they don't need more than 3 years. If you're going to an investor, they don't really need more than 5 years. Because if you're not in a shape where you're going to be profitable then within 5 years, then it's the kind of plan where it's an institutional play because it's 10 or 20 years, and I don't think that's probably most of your audience. So I'd say 3 years for a bank, not less than 3 years for a bank, and you could probably get away with 3 years for an investor, but I would recommend five. Now, that's kind of the big scope of it. Now, how you build the projection, I want you to think in terms of eaches. How much of something do you sell, and how much does it cost each thing? So if you're selling a widget, how much does it cost? How much does it cost to make that widget, and how much does it cost for somebody to buy it? That's the first place you start. If you're selling like a restaurant and you have a menu with a number of different things, come up with two or three price points that average out to what your total sales would be, and then forecast how much of each one of those price points. So like 40% is going to go to the high menu, and 50% is going to go to the middle menu, and then 10% is going to go to the low menu. And then you'll take those prices and you'll forecast them out. I usually like to do forecasts for three-year projections by month so that you can see. The reason why you do them by month instead of by year is because in the beginning, you're going to be losing money. And you need to understand by month how much money you're going to be losing so you understand how much operating capital you need to have in your back pocket to cover those losing months. And you will not see that if you do it by year. And also, some businesses are seasonal. Restaurants are seasonal. Retail is seasonal. We all know about Black Friday. That's where all of these retailers go into the black. That's why it's called Black Friday, not because anything depressing is happening. It's very joyful for them because they've been running negative numbers all year long. So doing your financials by month, I think, is absolutely necessary, especially in a small business, so you can see, you can identify the point at which you break even and start to make money, and you start to be able to take cash out of the business instead of putting cash into the business to keep running. But this whole concept of thinking about eaches, what things cost to make, what they sell for, and you handle the cost of what you're selling separate from your expenses, because those costs only happen when you sell something. But things like your rent, your lights, your internet bill, your bandwidth expenses, your insurance, those things go on whether you sell a single thing or not. So your forecast of your sales and your cost of sales need to be one kind of set part of your financial projections. And then your expenses are a separate listing of things, and you're just going to take your sales, subtract the cost of what it cost you to sell it or what it cost you to make the thing you sell. Then you're going to subtract your expenses, and that's going to get you to what is called operating profit. And in most cases, that's going to be more than enough. You're not going to have to really go much further than that, although if you take a loan out, you could deduct the loan payments from your operating profit. And if you've got any adjustments or any dividends to investors, you could take it out of your operating profit. And that would get you to what's called EBITDA, earnings before income tax, depreciation, and adjustments. So those are the things that you want to do, but I'm saying I don't want it to seem hard for people. If they get our ebook, they can actually go out to our website, which is called Killer Business Plan, which goes with the book, and there's actually very easy-to-use financial models that they can just plug and play their stuff in, and it goes really, really fast. And the book explains how to use the model. So We actually build those. We give them away because we just want people to be able to deal with this in a simple way. And once you see the models, how they're laid out, it just makes total sense about why you would do it that way.
Excellent. So what I'm going to kind of turn it around a little bit instead of asking you a question. What are, I know, like you said, working with your clients, you make them get involved to be sure they understand, and you kind of work with them on the research for things that they don't know to continually build and to feed that business plan. What are some of the things that is common to where business owners get stuck and they just don't know what to do or how to get unstuck?
Well, in writing business plans, typically business owners get stuck on their idea and how great it is and how it's going to make so much money, and they become blind to the competition. They become blind to what it would actually cost to deploy it, get it out into the market. And so one of my jobs is to be the rocks in their pockets to keep them from floating away and get them through that very difficult discussion of, well, here's what it's really going to cost you to launch, and here's what it's really going to cost to do what you think it's going to do. I think that's one place where people get stuck, is they're so in love with their idea that the truth becomes hard to hear. That's one place. The customer, which we've already discussed several times, is the second place they get stuck. But then after they launch, this is the number one place after they launch. I could put a $5 million marketing budget in your business plan. And you could say, Peter, I've got that $5 million. And after you launch, I swear this happens almost every time. Only 5% of my customers actually do what they're supposed to do. Most people do not spend the marketing money they have budgeted on marketing. They just don't do it. And then they call me on the phone, and I've had this experience. Wow, what a crappy business plan you wrote. I'm not hitting the numbers that you projected at all. And the first question I always ask them is, and you can guess it, how much are you spending on marketing? And they go, well, I'm not spending it. It's like I'm throwing that money away. No, you're not throwing the money away. You have to execute your marketing plan or you won't get the sales. And so after people have launched, that's their number one place. They do not spend enough on marketing, and the money they spend on marketing, they spend on the wrong things.
So following the important thing here from what Peter just said, is follow your plan. Don't write a plan, toss it on the shelf, and say, okay, I'm going to do my own thing. That's where you
mess
up.
Well, yeah, most importantly, if you in your mind when you were doing your marketing plan said, oh, I need 20, like for example, if you're opening a yogurt shop, just something as simple as a yogurt shop, you need like a $15,000 opening blitz, where you put out a bunch of coupons and you get in every single newspaper you can get into, and maybe you do a little radio and you do a bunch of different stuff to attract people to your store because nobody knows to go there, right? I cannot tell you how many people get out there and they go, wow, nobody came to my blitz. Well, what did you do? Oh, well, I did some Valpak discount coupons. It's not enough. So the number one thing is people have to be able to see you to buy from you. And that's why the marketing is, you can't give it short shrift. And I think most newbies and most new business owners do not do the marketing correctly, and they don't invest in the marketing the way they need to.
Okay. Speaking on the marketing, do you suggest, or, and then I don't know, you may just leave it up to each individual, with social media being the way that it is today, and so many tools are out there to help build various campaigns and, you know, all of this for your social media. For someone that doesn't have a huge, starting out and doesn't have a huge budget, do you recommend to say, okay, yes, absolutely, use social media for what it is. I mean, just, but use it the right way. And then you still may have somebody that have all the money in the world, you know, for their marketing. Would you suggest that they do it the same way?
That's a really interesting question. I think the social media thing is, first of all, I don't think anybody really understands how it works. And I've gone a I've gone to a million different seminars and talked to a million different people who are really successful at it. The one thing that I can say to you is, yes, social media, yes, do it, because there's never been an easier way to reach so many people so inexpensively, but you have to test and you have to be patient. You have to put an ad out. You have to put, like, for example, we're rolling out a new product called Startup Camp, which is one day you come in and you walk out, you have a pitch deck, 3 years of financials, and you're ready to go. So we're getting ready to launch that project, right, that product. So we're working through our Facebook ads now, and we're putting our Facebook ads and we're testing. We're finding things like changing the background color from blue to red causes the clicks to go up like 0.25%. Now, why would it do that? Who knows? Doesn't matter. But the only reason we know is because we tested it. So some words draw better than others, and you've got to be really careful about the demographic you're aiming at. And so I guess what I'm saying is, yes, emphatically, yes, social media, yes, you need to do it. And the other thing I'm going to say is the true social media experts that are really good at it, you're not going to find them. They're not available to you. So everybody that's walking around the street or you see at the Chamber of Commerce says, oh, yeah, I'm a social media expert, don't believe them. If they're social media experts, they're not talking to you. They're on the 50th floor of some building somewhere, okay? So you have to become the social media expert. And the way that you become the social media expert is you test. You put things out. They fail. For example, if you put a click-through on Facebook and it gets better than 1.5%, that's a hit. If you get 3% response, that's a gold mine, okay? So you have to recalibrate your thinking about stuff to understand where the numbers are and how all of that works. And then once you get good at testing, and once you get good at methods of testing, you can use services like HubSpot, different kinds of services that can automate that process for you. Then the next thing you know, then you're going to start getting hits and driving things off of the internet. And that's where you want to be, because then you have the possibility, depending on the product that you offer, to have mailbox money where you don't even have to come in, which is what everybody really wants.
Right. That said, making money while you sleep.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Wow, this time has flown by on this call. I mean, it was wonderful talking to you, and you had a lot of good points that you put out. And I know any and everybody that listens to this will see business plans in a different light.
Good.
But before we end the call, I would like for you to put out if someone wanted to get in touch with you, wanted to work with you, wanted to follow you, and if you have anything that's coming up, I want you to go ahead and share it with everyone.
Well, that's beautiful, and I appreciate that very much. You can reach me personally. You can call our office at 949-336-8284 or toll-free at 800-741-8444. You can email me personally at pmehit, at the word custom, C-U-S-T-O-M, B-P-S, Boy Paul Sam, .com. And if you go to our website, which is custombps.com, and get on our mailing list, you will become aware of the different events. We do a lot of speaking, and we also have this product launch coming out that some of you may be interested in. And so that's my story. But if you call me or you email me and you say you want Killer Business Plan, I will send you an e-copy of the book, and you will not be sorry. It's endorsed by Ivan Meisner, the guy who founded BNI, of all people. And it's a good book. So that's my story, and I really appreciate being on your show. It's been a lot of fun. They've been great questions. You've made me work.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate you working for me.
Yeah, you did. You really made work this time.
Thank you. And what is your Twitter and Facebook?
My Twitter is Peter Mehit at twitter.com, and my personal Facebook is Peter Mehit at facebook.com. It's, I think it's Peter-Mehit at facebook.com, and that will take you to the company page, which I should have memorized, but I just freaking don't, which is unfortunate.
Not a problem. Look, it's on Facebook. We can find it.
You got it.
We can find it. Not a problem. So, again, I thank you. I mean, it was a lot of valuable information, and This link will be out, so everybody click on the link, listen in, get the information. If you have not started on a business plan, start today on a business plan. So it's Business Baby, again, bringing you those savvy solutions to continue productivity and growth. Follow us on Twitter at It's Business Baby, BAB1, and on Facebook, It's Business Baby. Thanks again, Peter, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. It's Business Baby.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.